11:45, so let's get started. Reb, first of all, welcome everybody. Thank you for coming to learn together again. Rabbi Bacon requested that today we discuss some kulas that people might be able to utilize this year on Pesach as a result of the fact that that we're going through what we're going through in terms of the coronavirus. So let's go through some kulas as per Rabbi Bacon's suggestion. Many of these are things that Rav Schechter has already spoken about, and I'll just be reiterating. Some I guess he hasn't yet spoken about. So let's start with on Erev Pesach. There is a requirement for a Bechor to fast on Erev Pesach, but we figured out an Eitza, how to avoid having to fast on Erev Pesach, and that is by attending or participating in a Siyum. And we use a Siyum in a number of different times to be able to use the celebration as a reason to not observe what would otherwise be a minhag that we would have to observe, such as during the 9 days, to be able to eat meat. So when it comes to attending a siyum, typically one would have to attend, one would think you would have to attend in person. Moreno Rav Schechter thought that even typically it's not necessary for a person to attend a siyum in person, that as long as you're participating in the simcha and you're joining in the simcha, even if you're only participating by phone or even if you're only participating by Zoom or by something like that, that would be good enough. There are a number of poskim that are not particularly excited about that, although Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted in a number of Svarim as also permitting participating in such a way in a Siyum. There are a number of poskim that would suggest otherwise. Look, a Siyum definitely does not require a minyan. If you want to say Kaddish, you need a minyan, but to celebrate the completion of a piece of Torah, you don't need a minyan, and to label it as a Sudas Mitzvah, you don't need a minyan. The question really is, what is the matir of eating on Erev Pesach if you're a Bechor, or eating meat during the 9 days? Is it that you are participating in a Seudas Mitzvah, or is it that you are participating in a celebration of Torah? If it's about a Seudas Mitzvah, so, you know, as much as we might say we'll have a sheer lunch over Zoom, you know, but my lunch isn't your lunch and your lunch isn't, we're not really participating in the same Seuda. We happen to be having a Seuda at the same time in different locations. So as far as Seudas Mitzvah, it would seem that it would not qualify as a Seudas Mitzvah. But as far as if it's not only about Seudas Mitzvah, but it's about making a celebration of Torah and participating in the celebration of Torah, then it would seem to work. There's enough nafkamina in the other direction. What if a person wasn't there for the siyum itself, but they just show up to the meal later on in the meal? So a person made a siyum at 7 o'clock, and some of his friends show up at 7:30. Are they allowed to participate of that fleshik food during the 9 days, or of that food of their bechor on Erev Pesach in the morning? L'chora, it would turn out that if it's about the Seudas Mitzvah, so you're participating in what is a Seudas Mitzvah, but you didn't really participate in the Gomro Shel Torah, so to speak. But be that as it may, Rav Schechter was very unequivocally and clearly makil for this year that we could certainly rely on a siyum that is made over the internet, over Skype, over Zoom, or whatever else, and that we could be making with that issue. Another issue that comes up, probably the number one issue that I've been asked about so far, that comes up in advance of Pesach. A lot of people are making Pesach for the very first time, and even those who aren't, Pesach is a time where typically people are doing a lot of Tevilas Kelim. Now, to have a Tevilas Kelim go on in the regular way, when we're so concerned about the virus spreading, especially by people who may have the virus and are touching surfaces, and could spread very, very easily that way. So there are certain communities that they've actually shut down the Keli Mikvah. I heard of one community that shut down the Keli Mikvah just for fear of the virus spreading. Another community I know of shut down the Keli Mikvah because the Keli Mikvah happens to be the same place. It's in the same basic location as the women's mikveh, and they're fearful that if a person gets diagnosed, gets a positive diagnosis, they're going to have to list off all the places that they have been, and they're going to go and shut down all of those places that they have been, and they don't want to shut down the women's mikveh, so they shut down the keli mikveh in advance, so that just in case anyone who goes to the keli mikveh subsequently gets diagnosed won't have to shut down the women's mikveh. It happens to be that second concern is no longer a concern, meaning that there are so many people at this point, and I think the numbers that we're seeing are also not nearly the numbers that we're seeing are very, very minuscule percentage of the people that actually have this virus. But even with the numbers that they know about of confirmed cases, they're no longer going and tracking down every place everybody was and shutting down those places. They just can't anymore. It's just too much. Even with just the numbers that you're seeing of a couple of thousand people in New York, I can tell you there are a couple of thousand people in North Woodmere that have this virus. I mean, the idea that there's a couple of thousand people in New York that have the virus is a joke. I mean, so there just isn't wide enough testing, and certainly not a fast enough turnaround time on the testing. But be that as it may, so people want to know. So what are we supposed to do about Tevilas Kelim? So one Eitza is certainly for those who live on the south shore of Long Island, or the north shore, I guess. If anyone lives on any shore of any island, there is an Eitza that you have that you could just go to the ocean and do the Tevilas Kelim in the ocean or some other body of water that would be kosher for Tevilas Kelim, where you're not so concerned about the spreading of the virus. So that a number of people here in the five towns have been doing that. Another eitza that a number of people have been doing, if the keli mikveh is open, is to wear gloves at the keli mikveh and try not to touch any surfaces and tovel all the kelim while wearing gloves, then immediately discard the gloves, dispose of the gloves, and then wash off all the kelim with soap and water very thoroughly right afterwards. That is a less ideal option, but it is an option that presents itself. Another potential option, although we have to see whether it would have to be in the situation with rabbinic guidance where this would be permitted. If you don't live near an ocean and your keli mikveh is closed, the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kuf Chaf Si'if Tazayin paskins based on the Rush that a person should not tovel a kli on Shabbos because it's near a kemisakin mana. It looks like you're fixing the kli. So what do you do if you forgot to tovel a kli before Shabbos or Yom Tov? So give it as a matana to a non-Jew, says the Shulchan Aruch, and then borrow it back from that non-Jew. Then after Shabbos, you can buy it back from the non-Jew and then tovel it with a bracha. The Taz in Sivkat Yilches says that even if you don't buy it back, you would still need to tovel it. The Taz is concerned that if you're going to be the one using it, then of course it's your kli. Now the reason a kli is obligated in Tevila, even though you gave it to the guy, is because you're the one that's always using it. But a number of poskim suggest for electric appliances that you could rely on this, meaning that you could take it, let's say you have an electric appliance that you're going to be using constantly, and you're afraid to tovel it, so because you're afraid it's going to break. So a number of poskim suggest that you can sell it to a non-Jew, do this whole shtick that the Shulchan Aruch says to do for Shabbos, to do it for an electric appliance throughout the week. L'chora, one could rely on this until the virus passes. If they can find a non-Jew who's willing to buy their kelim and then borrow those kelim from a non-Jew, l'chora, that might be another solution if someone does not have access, easy access to an ocean, or if somebody does not have access to a keli mikveh that could be used in a responsible way, that could be used in a way where there's no concern for spreading of the virus, or if someone is quarantined and they're unable to go out of their home, l'chora, this is a reasonable thing to rely on. There is a general machlokas haposkim, whether electric appliances ever need to whether electric appliances ever need to tevila in the first place. Both Morena Rav Schechter and Rav Asher Weiss are makel on the issue, but for different reasons. If your reason for being makil is, I think, as Rav Asher Weiss said, that anus rachmana patre, that that since this is a mitzvah and it's not just a matir, but it's a mitzvah, and by a mitzvah we say anus rachmana patre, so the chara, someone who has no access to a keli mikvah because of this, or has no access to outside of their home, one might be able to extend anus rachmana patre over here as well, but it would seem the option of selling it to a guy would be better. Again, the best option is to tovel by the ocean, or to figure out a way that the keli mikvahs could work. There is another issue. We're just running through issues over here. There are many people that have a minhag never to sell chametz gamur, but it could be that this year, because of a fear of supplies being readily available right after Pesach, may be interested in selling their chametz gamur, even though they wouldn't normally do so. So Moreno Rav Shechter thought that this is totally permissible. He pointed out that there's a Dagal Mervava in Yaradeya, that's in Siman Reish Yudalid, that says that a minag, while the Ran in Maseches Nedarim writes that a minag tov is binding mishum neder, but that's only if you plan on giving it up mikanu laba, you're going to need a Taras Nedarim to get rid of that minag tov. But if your whole minag is going to continue, it's just that right now you're in a situation where for the time being you're unable to keep that minag, it could be that it's not even binding mitam neder, and therefore a person can go about selling his chametz gamur as well, even if he typically does not sell his chametz gamur. A number of people are asking about meat that they purchased, or chicken that they purchased weeks ago and has been in their freezer ever since, and it's not labeled kosher lepesach chicken or kosher lepesach meat. So can they, are they permitted to use that meat on Pesach? So my friend Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, each and every year, just before Purim, always sends out a tweet, Facebook, Instagram, I don't know, all the social media outlets that he's very popular on, and he sends out a notification, buy your meats and chickens now for Pesach and freeze them, because before the prices go up. And each year I retweet it, and someone always gets back to me from the kashrus industry and says, you really shouldn't retweet that. That's not really right. It's not, they kasher out the whole place where they butcher all the meats, and the place has, there is chametz in that place. So even though raw meat doesn't have any chametz in it, and people aren't going to know the difference between raw meat and meat that's been marinated, and the different marinades very often have chametz in them, so I have a little more confidence in people, certainly for this year, to know the difference between raw meat and a meat that's in a marinade that's been prepared in some way other than just butchering it, other than just cutting it and having raw meat and raw chicken. So I think certainly for this year, I really think every year, but certainly for this year, if you have just plain chicken or meat, raw, that is not prepared in any way with any marinade or with anything else, I think there's plenty to rely on. Even if it was processed in the kitchen that has, or in a butcher shop that has breading in it and things like that, but this meat that you have is totally raw, it's a far-fetched concern that any of the breading ever touched this meat, and that concern could be alleviated simply by rinsing the meat. And even if it is true, chametz before Pesach is batel b'shishim anyhow. So it would be batel even if it were a concern, even if it were actually true. Another issue is about using machine matzah. Maybe this will be our last issue for today. Using machine matzah for fear that the hand matzah bakeries were all using their hands, and a lot of these bakeries might be in communities where people didn't take this virus so seriously, Rachman al Tzlan. So it could be that they finished baking these matzahs a long time ago, but you should be aware many of many great poskim and great tzaddikim were dafka makbit to use only machine shmura and not hand shmura. The Soloveitchik family was known to have this hakpah. The Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, I think the Rav himself was also makbid about this, to only use machine shmura. They trusted machine shmura more than they trusted hand shmura. So to say that a person can rely on using machine shmura, I think that is not at all a stretch if a person is nervous. I don't know, we should speak to doctors and speak to people who work in the matzah industry, I guess, and find out if there's any reason for concern. I doubt that there is any reason for concern, but if there is a reason for concern, learn, or if someone is just themselves personally nervous about it. So you can't blame them, and I think there's no problem. And not just me, Rav Schechter also thought that there was no problem in using machine shmura matzah. The issue with machine matzah is whether it's a din in lishma. Do you say that isha mishum chitzav is a din only in nezikin, or it's a din in kala tarakula? But certainly the baking of the matzah, that's as far as the lisha, the baking of the matzah, it seems pretty clear that has a din of being done lishma, and would have a full din of regular shmura matzah. So those are some of the issues that have been coming up for this year in particular, that maybe people are nervous about, that maybe we could be a little more makel about. As I come up with more ideas, maybe in future shiurim we'll address some other ideas, and I certainly welcome anybody to contact me with further questions or further issues where you think we might need to utilize leniencies that are viable leniencies, but particularly this year, considering the matzav that we find ourselves in. Everyone should have a wonderful day. Everyone should continue to stay safe and stay healthy. And I thank you very much for coming to learn with me today.